Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Biden administration's first 100 days concludes this week, and this evening the president will speak to Congress to lay out an agenda for proceeding on perhaps the one issue that can garner bipartisan support, and that would be infrastructure, although a final result is far from clear. The president is also expected to lay out an ambitious plan for an expansion of federal funding for pre-K and community colleges. He's also expected to lay out proposals for paid family leave and an extension of already expanded child tax credits. You can hear the president's speech along with a Republican response this evening at 8 here on Public Radio 89.5. Today on Studio Tulsa, I'm joined by David Blatt, professor of public policy at OU's Tulsa's graduate program in public administration. For 11 years, Blatt was a public policy analyst at the OK Policy Institute, and he was executive director there for 9 years. He previously served as director of public policy for the Community Action Project of Tulsa County and was a budget analyst for the Oklahoma State Senate. He joins me today to look at the Biden administration's first 100 days as well as the obstacles confronting it on its achieving its policy goals. David Blatt, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Great to be back.
President Biden will be speaking to the nation this evening to mark somewhat the first 100 days of his administration. As we go through these 100 days, what would you say his biggest accomplishment has been so far?
I think Joe Biden has been successful at his number one priority, which was to return a sense of normalcy to the presidency and to American politics. I think what we've seen from Biden in his first 3.5 months is quiet competence. And I think for many millions of Americans, that's exactly what they were looking for, both the competence in terms of surrounding himself with experienced, capable people, and the quiet part, which means that he is not on Twitter 18 hours a day leveling insults and bragging about accomplishments and doing everything that really made the previous 4 years such an abnormal period of time and sort of a sense that the country was in just a constant period of disarray.
But he also seems to have learned the lessons of the last administration he was a part of, which was the Obama administration, which is through this 100 days, they have been very quick to tout their accomplishments over that 100 days, which some say that the Obama administration really didn't do enough of.
Absolutely. I think you have a lot of people in the Biden administration who were veterans of the Obama years and have tried to learn some lessons from it. I wouldn't want to minimize what Obama accomplished during his first 100 days. He did get a major stimulus bill passed, which at the time seemed like a very large injection of money. It was almost $800 million. Biden has more than doubled that, and that was on top of several other bills that have been passed by Congress. I think if you just look at it from a legislative standpoint, the passage of the American Relief Plan certainly stands as his major achievement. But I think, as you said, they've been very careful or quick to be out there and touting their achievements and making sure that what they have done isn't just ignored or missed within those 24-hour news cycles.
Also, you have to look at the rollout of the vaccine. Now, to be fair to the last administration, most of those plans were already underway, and a million doses a day would probably be fair for the amount of rollout that was done during the last administration. But what they have done is sort of put a sense of we're going to under-promise, over-deliver, and that rollout was coming regardless, but they've managed to at least minimize the flaws in the chain to get vaccines out there.
I think you can say that the vaccine distribution has been one of the accomplishments of the first 100 days. You know, as you said, he initially said 100 million doses in 100 days, which many people at the time realized was not much of a challenge given that we already were at close to a million doses, even in January. But we're now consistently hitting two or 3 million. And according to the last numbers I've seen, somewhere around 140 million Americans have received at least one vaccine dose. So we have now a clear majority of the adult population that has had at least one vaccine. And for a great number of those are now fully vaccinated. And as you said, the Biden administration can't and doesn't claim credit for the vaccine production. That was Operation Warp Speed under the Trump administration. But I think in the distribution, working closely with the states, making sure that all the various arms of the government are on the same page, a strong planning contingent, all those things have gone really well. He hasn't been completely successful in depoliticizing the vaccine or other issues, but I think it has been, as I said to begin with, more of a quiet competence than the constant craziness that we saw under the previous administration.
If we can talk about the COVID relief bill, you know, $1.9 trillion, and it really was more than just relief. It was really about this huge economic stimulus to get the economy moving fast. And, you know, it's, as you get into the fine print, there is being money spent in a lot of different areas. Will all of that money be spent fruitfully?
I think it's going to take some time to really know. But as you said, this was a major bill. And one certainly could have imagined Biden taking office in January as the vaccine was rolling out, as the economy had already made a lot of progress towards a recovery, and saying, you know what, now's the time to take our foot off the pedal and be a little bit more cautious. And instead, you know, much to the surprise of many people, including many on the left who expected a much more cautious approach, instead he said, this is really an opportunity to not only confront some immediate issues, such as with the $1,400 stimulus checks, but also to try to really look at some longer-term transformational changes. So there were changes enacted to the Affordable Care Act, for example, to make those premium tax credits more affordable to more people. There was this major expansion in the child tax credit and in the earned income tax credit, which are expected to cut child poverty in half in America over the next year. That was not necessarily an immediate stimulus response. It was using the economic crisis as a way to begin to address some long-term structural problems, particularly the long-term crisis of economic inequality, which has left so many people behind, which has generated so much, I think, of the frustration and the political unease in this country that it's really built up over years. Now, certainly that first relief plan wasn't the entirety of the agenda. We've also seen the two-part infrastructure plan that is being rolled out. There's a lot left on the Biden agenda, but he sent out a clear signal that he was going to be very aggressive in trying to push forward, guided by a pretty strong belief that government has an important role to play to address the country's biggest problems.
Now, the child, I know at least in the case of the earned income tax credit, that's a time-limited amount of time that you'll see that. And I think maybe the expanded child tax credit is also a limited amount of time. Can that do that much good? I think, what is it, like a year or 18 months or something like that?
Those provisions, as were several others in the American Relief Plan, were time-limited, but the administration and congressional Democrats immediately signaled that one of their top priorities is going to be to make those provisions permanent. What they're able to do with the first bill, which they did, were able to pass through the reconciliation process with a simple majority, was put forward a big spending package without feeling any real obligation for how to pay for it. And now, as you're looking at the next steps in their recovery plans and infrastructure, the administration is being more serious and saying, okay, here's what we're looking to do in order to pay for some of these priorities, which includes raising the corporate tax rate, raising tax rates on some high earners. And that's going to be, in some ways, more complicated.
Well, let's talk up a little bit about the infrastructure plan. As you mentioned, it's a two-step plan. One will be more traditional infrastructure, which traditionally has had bipartisan support. But when it comes to actually getting a bill across the finish line, that bipartisan support has been evaporating for the better part of 10 years.
Yeah. And that's, you know, you mentioned early on the lessons that the Biden administration has learned from the Obama administration. I think if you ask a lot of the political observers what is different, I think the philosophy of the Biden administration is bipartisanship, if possible, but not necessarily bipartisanship. And I think there's a sense that the Obama administration wasted a lot of time and political capital trying to bring Republicans on board. Biden is doing that as well. He's had a lot of meetings with groups, small groups of Republicans. He did on the stimulus bill. He's doing it now on infrastructure. But I think has made clear that if we can find common ground, if they can find common ground with Republicans, they are eager to do so and are willing to listen to Republican ideas. But if necessary, they are quite willing to move ahead with only Democratic votes, knowing that they have a very narrow majority in Congress, that they need all 50 senators plus the vice president to break a tie if that should happen. And they have a razor-thin majority in the House of Representatives as well. So they certainly haven't dismissed bipartisanship out of hand, but that isn't going to be the be-all, end-all for them in putting forward an agenda. They're sort of saying, here's what we need to do. We have an opportunity now, maybe for the next 2 years, maybe longer, but maybe not even 2 years. You never know what circumstances will arise if, you know, one of those 70 or 80 something year old senators should happen to pass away in the next 6 months, then the Democrats may not have a majority at all.
Right. My guest today is David Blatt, a professor of public policy at OU Tulsa. Prior to that, he ran the Oklahoma Policy Institute for many years. And we're talking about the first 100 days of the Biden administration. That milestone is coming up, and President Biden will be speaking to the nation this evening. Well, as you looked at the difficulties in passing an infrastructure bill, first of all, you know, everybody looks at Joe Manchin of West Virginia as being sort of the key vote. And Joe Manchin seems to be a little bit all over the place. It's like one time he signals, ah, yeah, I'm open to doing this. And then he's putting the brakes on. I guess that's, you know, a senator in the catbird seat. He basically has the power, and he's basically showing that he needs to be catered to get his support.
Absolutely. He has tremendous leverage.
I'm sure you've seen this at the state legislature over the years. And you know, a person having that sort of leverage.
Yeah, I don't know that we've ever, well, there was a period of time where the Senate was evenly divided in Oklahoma in the mid-2000s, 24 Republicans, 24 Democrats. What you're seeing now, though, with the U.S. Senate is that every single vote is needed. And Joe Manchin is in a very unique situation. He represents a state that went for Trump by 35, 40 points in the last two elections. Any Democrat other than Joe Manchin doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell of being elected in West Virginia. So Joe Manchin can say with great credibility that when he says, I'm not going to support a $15 an hour minimum wage because my constituents aren't there, he gets listened to on a whole bunch of issues. If Joe Manchin says, I'm looking for a more moderate approach on this, I would like to see, I'm open to raising the corporate income tax rate, but to 25% and not 28%, he needs to be taken seriously, both because he is that 50th vote, 51st vote, but also because he represents a much more conservative state than any other of his colleagues within the Democratic caucus. Kristen Sinema from Arizona is in a somewhat similar situation, but you know, Arizona is a purple state. West Virginia is a deep red state. So, you know, I think there's no doubt that trying to cater to Joe Manchin, trying to figure out what he needs, what he'll swallow, is probably a full-time job for more than one member of the White House staff. But it makes sense. If you think back, you mentioned under the Obama administration, you know, even when there were 58 or 59, 60 Democrats in Senate, you still had a similar situation where, because of the filibuster, when Joe Lieberman said he would not accept the public option as part of the Affordable Care Act, there was no public option. You know, at a certain point, you have just real leverage when your vote is needed.
I'm trying to remember the name of the senator in Nebraska who was also a Democrat, who he also held a lot of leverage.
Yeah, Ben Nelson, Cornhusker kicker, which was inserted and then ultimately actually taken out of the Affordable Care Act to get Ben Nelson on board.
Right. Well, beyond Joe Manchin in the Senate, you also look at the House side with only, what is it now, 6 votes? You know, you have some open seats. Alcide Hastings has died. That's another Democratic vote that won't be filled for a while. So Nancy Pelosi also has a very limited caucus, and she has a wide-ranging caucus. And there's still some moderate Democrats within the House caucus.
There are. And, you know, both Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer in the Senate have really difficult situations trying to balance politically diverse caucuses. And, you know, for Pelosi in particular, it's no secret that there has been ongoing tension really ever since they were first elected between the Speaker and the so-called members of the squad, AOC and others who, without question, want to see a more progressive agenda. You know, for example, last week when Joe Biden introduced his plan to cut carbon emissions and his climate goals, AOC and Senator Markey and others put forward an alternate plan. But for now, what's been really interesting is that there seems to be a consensus within the left of the Democratic Party that they have limits as to how far they could go. I think Joe Biden has been very successful, really going back to since when he first secured the nomination back last March and April, of signaling his openness to listening to and working with the more progressive or left-leaning voices in the Democratic Party, working very closely with Senator Sanders and with Senator Warren. He appointed Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to be part of the group that developed his plan on climate change. So he's actually, I think, been very successful in keeping the caucus united in key areas. If he's able to continue that over the next year and a half and then past the midterms, certainly remains to be seen.
So what is your thought on whether the administration will be able to get an infrastructure bill across the finish line? Because, you know, the Obama administration wanted an infrastructure bill beyond the Recovery Act in 2009. The Trump administration seemed to say they wanted an infrastructure bill, and yet none has passed.
My sense is that they will get something through, but there are some big strategic issues. Many, even including in the Democratic Senate leadership, are urging the administration to roll their 2 infrastructure bills back into one bill. You know, right now the thinking is let's pass one, which is more the traditional infrastructure of roads and bridges and the grid, hope to get Republican support and maybe even get that passed with over 60 votes, and then come back and do a second bill, which would be more along healthcare and childcare and other more social programs, which I think they recognize is unlikely to get much Senate support, and try to use the reconciliation process again to pass that with just 51 votes. And some of the Senate leadership is saying, you know, they just have so much on their agenda. They've got so little time to try to roll everything back into one bill. I don't know how that will play out, but I do think that at the end of the day, there will be a substantial infrastructure bill that passes, whether it's $800 million or $2 trillion, I think really remains to be seen. Without question, there's, you know, every lobbying group in Washington is now working hard to make sure that their priorities are either put into the bill or things that they're trying to kill are taken out. And it's going to be a tough process. But I do think at the end of the day, this is going to be one of those priorities that the administration will have some real success on.
Let's talk about an issue where the Biden administration seems to have stumbled out of this starting gate, and that has been immigration. Everything from raising the caps on legal immigration, which they basically said we're going to leave the caps where they are. There was an uproar, and they said, okay, we're going to revisit that issue. But also the seemingly unprepared for the seasonal increase that happens along the southern border, and with a opposition party that's ready to exploit that as a liability.
Absolutely. I think immigration has been the toughest issue for the Biden administration. They did introduce a number of measures through executive order right off the bat, trying to put an end or a suspension to deportations, and a couple of federal judges struck that down as being beyond their executive power. As you said, they had nothing short of a debacle in announcing their refugee limits. They were supposed to increase those up to 60,000 this year or even 120,000. And then a couple weeks ago said they're going to keep those at the Trump administration level, and then immediately had to do a 180 on that after there was a backlash from more pro-immigration groups. But they're definitely facing a really difficult situation at the border with unaccompanied minors and family migration. This, you know, they're the third administration in a row, dating back at least to 2014 under the Obama administration, 2018, 2019 under the Trump administration, now 2021 with the Biden administration. This is just a huge logistical issue. As children cross, where do you put them while their cases are being investigated, while they try to find longer-term settlement for them? I think the Biden administration, in fairness to them, inherited a situation where the Trump administration had not invested in the kind of physical infrastructure and staffing needed to handle these flows. And I think the, you know, the best that can be said, it's going to take time to get new centers in place, properly staffed, put the mechanism, you know, if you look back to the Trump administration, when they were separating children from families, 3 years later, there are still hundreds of children who have not been reunified, or you can't identify what happened to them at all. I think Biden is really trying to avoid that. Certainly, over the last 2 or 3 weeks, things have gotten a little quieter. It's hard to say whether that's because the situation is beginning to settle itself or whether we've just moved on to the latest issue. But I do think this is going to be an ongoing struggle, in part because this is one of these long-term issues that I think everybody recognizes needs to be addressed, that there has to be some kind of solution to immigration. And I know that the president would desperately like to do something on that, so long as you have the 60 votes needed to get anything through, anything substantive through the Senate. That's going to be really difficult. And, you know, I think if you want to count the failures of the Biden administration, there certainly hasn't been much movement towards changing the rules of the Senate to allow more legislation to get passed without going through the filibuster.
Well, we expect more announcements today in this speech tonight, marking the first 100 days of the Biden administration. And, you know, the polling has come out this weekend looking at how the country is looking at the Biden administration. You see him with a net positive, and people have said, well, this is better than the last administration. but still compared to previous presidents, and even President Obama, who was a highly polarizing figure, going back to George W. Bush after a very contentious election, Biden's approval rating of 52% is like one of the lowest for a president ending the first 100 days.
Yeah, so he's remained over 50%. I saw the latest average from 538.com was around 55%, but you're mm-hmm. right. It is substantially less than where Barack Obama was at this point in his presidency, but considerably above where Donald Trump was, not only 100 days into his presidency, but really throughout his presidency. You know, Trump remained consistently between 38 and 44% come hell or high water for 4 years. I think what you do have to recognize is that compared to 12 years ago, say, during the first days of the Obama administration, we are more polarized. You know, we've just come out of the most divided period of time, at least in 4 decades, arguably in a century in this country, in an election where you have a substantial minority of people and a majority of Republicans who frankly don't believe that the election was held and decided fairly, who really don't see the president as having been legitimately elected. And so, you know, the fact that Biden for now is holding over 90% approval among Democrats, which also is not obvious given that he was not the first choice of many on the left within the Democratic Party, but also is receiving some support, 20-30% from Republicans and higher among independents, is testament to the fact that so far he has been fairly popular. And I think also speaks to the difficulty that Republicans have in finding a way to attack Joe Biden. He's proven to be a fairly elusive target, both during the presidential election and as president. He's just a hard person to demonize because I think he is seen as avuncular, as with a huge heart, as somebody who is able to empathize. It's hard to necessarily present him as a figure putting forward a radical socialist agenda.
He's hard to demonize.
Yeah.
David Blatt, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
David Blatt is a professor of public policy at the OU Tulsa Graduate Program in Public Administration. The Biden administration's first 100 days concludes this week, and he'll be speaking to a joint meeting of Congress this evening to lay out his agenda for proceeding on infrastructure and expansion of federal funding for education. That speech takes place this evening at 8. You can hear it here on Public Radio 89.5, along with a Republican response by South Carolina Democratic Senator Tim Scott. That's this evening at 8. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.